Unfortunately, the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, were never happy just to kill people, but in many cases they went way beyond. The picture that we always see, we always think of in Auschwitz, is not just so much the gas chambers, but the ovens. The fact that they would take the bodies and constantly be burning them. And unfortunately, after the war, that came with the questions of, well, what do you do with the ashes? To the extent that you could identify, if possible, whose ashes it was, would you have to bury that in an individual grave? And to the extent that you couldn't, would you have to bury that as well? That's just the beginning of the questions. So let's start with a Mishnah in Ohalos. The Mishnah in Ohalos has a machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Chachamim. In general, when we talk about Tumah, in this case we're talking about Tumas Ohel, which is a little related to this week's Parsha. When we talk about the type of impurity that a Kohen can't come in contact with, and particularly when we're talking about human beings, where it's not just a matter that a Kohen's not allowed to touch a dead body or carry a dead body, but cannot even be in the same room as a dead body, what if there's part of a dead body? And that is a discussion in the second Perek of Ohalos, and it starts by talking different things: how much blood, how much bone, etc., how much of a limb. So in that discussion, it says, "Efesh serufin." What about ashes of a burnt body? What amount of ashes would be enough to prohibit a kohen from entering that room? Rabbi Elazar Meir, shiura barova, is that a quarter of a kav, a certain amount, a volume that is necessary? The Chachamim disagree, and they say the Chachamim metaharin. The Chachamim say that, in fact, no, unlike a limb or a bone or blood or the like, or flesh, where there would be an issue, when it comes to ashes, ashes, in fact, do not convey Tumah at all. The Rambam, in his Pirush HaMishnayos, in his commentary on the Mishnah,
it's a certain amount of flesh or bone. Is
yes.
it mitzvari from different
So
bodies?
that's a question, right? That is a machlokes in Sanhedrin. In Sanhedrin, if he says if you have a half a ravias of blood from one body and a half a ravias from another body, there's a discussion there whether or not, in a daf dalet or so, whether you could combine them into making it. Would that make it into one nefesh? That's the question. But here, when we're talking about ashes, which is our focus for now, it doesn't matter how much. It could be as much ashes as there are. There is no tumah. Why not? So the Rambam explains the Efer Serufim, Efer B'nei Adam HaNisrafim, explains that these are the talking about ashes of people that were burnt. Assuming that it's not like they were burnt on a pile of wood where you would have a mixture of ashes. This is according to the Rambam. This is no longer, it says, Chum says, this is no longer organic material. It is far removed from the body, and therefore it no longer has the status of a dead body, but rather it is something else. Now, in all fairness, what we're talking about here is specifically whether you are metame, whether it could make somebody ritually impure, A. And B, it's talking about Tumas Ohel. It's talking about whether if a Kohen would find himself in a room with these ashes, would that be problematic? It does not talk about directly whether a Kohen is allowed to touch it. Right? That may be a different halacha. According to the Rambam's understanding, probably not. No, but if it's not Metameh Ba'ohel, according to the Chachamim, it might still be Metameh B'Maga. We'll see, that's important.
What's the second term? I don't know.
If you touch it. Again, there are three different ways that a person can become ritually impure through a dead body. One is if you touch it. Right? I'll say this is it. The other one is if you carry it, even though you're not touching it. That's called Masa. Right? And then there's a third level, if I'm in the same room as it. That's called Tumas Ohel. Right? And there's differences between them. Obviously, the more direct, the more problematic. Touching is more problematic. And therefore, there are situations where you're allowed to be in the room, but you're not allowed to touch it. Yes?
In the same room, the same building.
So yeah, under the same roof.
Under the same roof.
Under the same roof. Forget it, it's a complex. It could be, even if not under the same roof, if it's going to pass that way. Well, let's. The Rambam in Hilchos Tumas Meis, in his halachic work, says Hamesh Nisraf v'sheldo, what a sheldo is, and his skeleton kayemes. If the skeleton remains, v'hu ashedra v'atzol is hareze betamei kamei shalem. If the body is burnt, but the skeleton remains, then in fact it maintains that it is tamei. Ein tzach v'romar im nechrach, avo im nisraf ashen is balbala tzuras tavnis tahar. However, if it's burned to the point where the not only is does the flesh burn off, but the entire skeleton burns up, at that point he says it is tahar, meaning that that no longer has the status of a dead body, and therefore it's not metame. Now, our concern is not tumas kohanim. Our concern is burial, whether there is an obligation of burial. And again, with obligation, arguably comes right, right? I'm not obligated to
R-I-G-H-T.
Oh, right. That kind of right. Meaning that, for example, I am not obligated to bury my pet. And since I am not obligated, I'm not allowed to bury my pet in a Jewish cemetery. Something that I'm not obligated to bury, it falls I'm actually not allowed to bury. Because again, this is set aside for something specific. So therefore, why do we bury bodies? So one of the major reasons is for the sake of Kohanim, right? That since Kohanim cannot come in contact with a dead body, we have a specific area where we keep all the dead bodies in order that the Kohanim know to avoid it so they don't become Tamei. If this does not cause a Kohen to become Tamei, so according to that, you would not have to bury it if that is the reason for burial. And if you're not allowed to bury, if you don't have to bury it, perhaps you're not even allowed to bury it. That would be the logical progression. Very interesting. Tosfos in Sanhedrin quotes a medrash from Taras Kohanim, and it talks about the interesting case of Nadav v'Avihu, reviewing that which everyone probably knows, that Nadav and Avihu were two of the sons of Aaron HaKohen, who were struck down for sinning at the Yom HaShmini L'Miluim, at the grand opening of the Mishkan. And if you remember, Aaron and his other two sons are told, don't worry about it. Instead, we're going to have your cousins remove the body. Now, the question is, why? Why didn't the siblings move the body?
Well, was it burnt to ashes?
Right.
The strange fire came, right?
Pulverized.
And they were struck and burned. But
so
how much were they burned?
So in general, so Aaron and his sons were Kohanim.
Right. And they're not supposed to come in contact with a dead body.
Unless
it's not a body anymore.
Except for the Kohen Gadol.
Unless Zion Krovim, correct.
What is that?
If it is a mother, father, brother, sister, son, daughter,
right.
Spouse,
right.
Wife, specifically. So, in those cases...
Unmarried sister.
What? Correct.
Unmarried sister.
So, in those cases, right, in fact, the Kohen is allowed to.
Right. So, why didn't they?
So, the question is, why didn't they? Right? Why should you bring in the cousins? These are brothers. So, shouldn't they be allowed to do it? So, that's what Tosfos is trying to understand. So Tosfos said, Tosfos, Ika beis b'raiso shnuyo stam de pligi meikro katani keitzer hoysam bisasam shnei chutin. There was the discussion, how did they exactly die? Rashi quotes that there were like two bolts of fire that entered their nose and burned their insides and left their outsides intact. B'nis of gufim b'gdeim kayamim. Shinev ha-teitze eishnuf de'atem ha-tocho l'asam v'yamusu. Baso hachi gabay v'yifkos ha-shreif katani shreifas neshama v'guf kayim. In one place, the first source indicates that the fire as it burned the entire body and just left the clothing. The second one is no, that it burnt the insides but left the outsides and the clothing. So the question is, V'im tamar amin v'parak hayosha mishal v'el tzafen hayusha nidchu l'Pesach sheni. But wait a second. We know the cousins were the ones that couldn't bring Pesach. According to one opinion, they couldn't bring the carbon Pesach. Why? When did this happen? What was the date? What's the yard site of Nadav and Avihu? Rosh Chodesh Nisan, right? So therefore, it takes a certain amount of time to become Tahar. Therefore, they weren't ready for the Korban Pesach. So the Isra from Mamish, according to the opinion that the body was totally burnt up, So the question is, wait a second. Well, if they really totally burnt up, then they didn't become Tamei.
Right.
So if they didn't become Tamei, why would they have to wait till Pesach Sheni? So Tosfos indicates, well, it must be the Yesh Roma, the Shaldan Kayemes. It must have been that the body was burnt, but the skeleton remained. The cover by Mapel's Meshinis of Shaldan Kayemes of Tamei. So what's the implication of Tosfos? The implication of Tosfos is in the event that the body, the skeleton was gone, then in fact there would be no tuma. And that would be even though they are actually transporting the ashes. Right? They removed the ashes. Right? It wasn't that we're just in the same room, but they actually picked it up. So you see from there that the Tosfos' opinion is that there's no tuma whatsoever. And in fact, Achronim point out the fact that the body was burnt, right, kind of cuts the other way. Why was it necessary to bring in someone else to move it? Why didn't the brothers do it? So the implication was that perhaps if we're dealing with ashes, etc., there is no obligation to, there is no mitzvah to bury. And if there's no mitzvah to bury, there's no heter that you can become tamei for it. So this is a fair amount of discussion about what exactly happened here. But the implication of all this is that if you're just dealing with ashes, ashes are not metame. That ashes in no way, ashes are so far removed from a body that the ashes do not have a status of a body and they're not metame. And it's not a big jump from there to say if they don't have a status of a body, there is no obligation to bury it. The Nodi Yehuda had a very interesting question where he's dealing with. The question was as follows. The Jewish community in a certain town rented out land for a cemetery for 150 years. They weren't able to buy it flat out, so they got a very long-term lease. Now they have the ability to purchase land. And the question is, should they move the bodies from the old cemetery to the new cemetery? Because eventually, it's going to be a farm. They're going to end up plowing the field. So that was the question. So, but on the other hand, after 150 years, what's left? So the Nodi Behuda writes in that discussion, once something is totally decomposed, there's nothing to talk about kvura anymore. Again, he seems to bring this as a proof that once everything is that far removed, there is no mitzvah to bury. Now, one more issue that is raised is the following.
Excuse me, before you move on. So, if the field where they rented, and there's nothing to, and they're
going to
just be plowed over.
Right, they did. Let's say it happened 10 years ago. Now, in 140 years from now, it's going to be plowed over.
Right.
In 140 years from now, whoever's buried now will be decomposed. It'll be gone.
I get that, but my point is that then if it's going to be plowed over, and crops are going to grow. That's okay, even though we have no site from our grandparents or whatever.
At that point, several generations beyond.
Right.
The Nodi Behuda thinks that that's once okay. It's gone that far.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay. We have a tradition, and the tradition is based a little bit on the Medrash in number 6, that there is a bone that never decomposes, and that is known as the loose bone. Correct.
Which one is
it? It's
the one that's loose, the one that's not tight.
The second vertebrae was the psak.
I think so.
Is it true? Yeah, me too.
Why would it
not
disintegrate?
What?
That's my point.
Hence the doubt. So, There's actually, it's very interesting. I heard the following Dvar Torah from Shlomo Carlbach. I don't get to quote him that often, but I actually heard it from he himself. And he points out that there is a tradition that we have is what? Correct. That there is this one bone, it's called the loose bone, and it never gets destroyed because that Tchias HaBeisim will come from the loose bone. And the loose bone only gets its nourishment from the Sudas Malav Malka. What? Okay, that's fine. It's true. That's what it says. The question is, what's the connection between the two of them? What does the fact that only gets... So I heard from Rav Shlomo as follows. He said that in fact, he said, everybody knows, that's how he said it, everybody knows that that Adam HaRishon was created on Friday. And had he only waited till Shabbos, he would have been able to eat from the Eitz Hadas. But because he ate early, right, that was it. He said, because the body got nourishment from the Eitz Hadas, it was a gezerah on the entire body. Since the entire body got nourishment, that in fact it would have to be destroyed. Death came to man. He said, but the loose bone only gets hanaf from Lava Malka. So the loose bone never got any nourishment from the Eitz Hadas. So therefore, death was never, you were never gozerid on the loose bone, and that's why it survives forever. Heard that from Shlomo Carlbach. Years later, not so many years later, I saw that the Torah Tumima had the same idea. Then after that, I saw it's also in the Mishnah Berurah, actually, the same idea. It's hard to imagine how people stole from Shlomo Carlbach. It's really outrageous. What? So the loose bone is second vertebrae, whatever it might be. What? Well, again, there is a city known as Luz,
right.
which is where it sounds like they filmed Talk Everlasting.
That I did not know.
Which is where the people never die. Right. The Gemara tells us that in the city of Luz, no one ever dies until they get so old, they get sick of living, they walk out of the city, and that's the end of it for them.
Things I don't know.
Ponce de Leon found Luz. Something like that. So what? I can neither confirm nor deny these rumors. The Medrash talks about this. In number six. Now that's relevant to us because if there really is a bone that is never destroyed, you're never going to have someone who's totally burnt.
Right.
Because you will always have this bone that survives. Right? So again, that's something in there. If you take this loose bone issue literally, right, then of course you would have to bury because you'd always have to assume there is some loose bone involved in it. That's one issue. Another issue is based on the Gemara, actually the Mishnah in Temura. The Mishnah in Temura explains that there are many things out there that are asur bahana. There are certain things that not only let's say aren't you allowed to eat it, but you're not allowed to get any benefit for it. We've mentioned basar v'chol, milk and meat together, you cannot get any benefit from it. Therefore, it says Elohim ha'negvarim, it is necessary for you to bury it so someone doesn't accidentally come to use it. Right, so it has a whole list of things. Not too many of them come up. Shor haniskol, egla arufa, tzipori mitzora. These are all things that, in fact, are also bahana. You're not allowed to get any benefit from it. And if you're not allowed to get any benefit from it, therefore, by definition, you should bury it. Right. So another argument we will see is that you're not allowed to get benefit from a dead body, and therefore, a dead body has to be buried. Now, again, if you tell me that ashes are so far removed from the body that they're not metame, one would have to wonder whether there's any problem getting hanav from it either. Because, again, it has changed in form so greatly that it wouldn't matter anymore.
What are we thinking the benefit is from a dead body that one would get? Are we talking about taking...
Corneas. That's a good thing you can do with a dead body.
Okay.
So... What? Shkayach. It's good to. It's lucky Meryl didn't slap him the first time. So, with that in mind, let's take a look at the practical tshuvas that are discussed regarding the ashes that came out of the Holocaust. The first tshuva, I quote, I put down a source And then I put down a second source in parentheses because I'm confused by this. I just have to tell you. What I'm quoting is the Har Tzvi, or Tzvi Pesach Frank. In parentheses, I put the Tzitz Eliezer. These appear in both places word for word, and it's neither of them indicate that they're writing to the other one. But it is such a copy that there has to be some confusion here.
As to who said it first or who wrote it first?
Correct. Again, this is most of the Har Tzvi. It's part of a larger Tzitz Eliezer. But the Tzitz Eliezer has a date on it for the 1950s. The Har Tzvi does not have a date on it. So the Tzitz Eliezer has who it's written to. It's written to the Rav Rashi of Akko. Right? The Har Tzvi does not have who it's written to, so I can't really tell you. So therefore, I give you both sources because it appears in both places. And the question is the same in both. The ashes of the victims of the concentration camps, should they be going collecting them in order to bury it? He thinks, absolutely you have to. He said, well, where does that come from? The fact is that if you look at it, it says when it comes to ashes, that is not the same as a body. As far as coming in contact with the Kohen, it's not considered a body. And quotes our Mishnah, quotes the Rambam, etc. Despite that fact, there's still several reasons. Racious, mipazesha asur mahano. One is because you cannot get a benefit from it. So even though a Kohen can come in contact with it, still you can't get benefit. The Tiferes Yisrael says, in fact, that the list is not a complete list. There are other things that should be on the list as well. A dead body is one of them. The Ozos, this is very important. It says, beyond that, Yesh Mitzvah B'Kfuras Eifah D'Sraf B'Shem Kavod HaChayim V'Gam B'Shem Kavod HaMeisim. There's a different reason as well, and that is to honor the living and honor the dead. One is you should do it that, to the extent possible, the dead person should have a final resting place in a Jewish cemetery. And two, the survivors should have a place to go to mourn their loved ones. And not only that, but burying, we assume, gives a certain form of kapara. It somehow erases sins. And in fact, he says, very interesting source that they both happen to offer, from the Gemara of Kamsa Bar Kamsa. It says that Titus HaRasha, every day his ashes were spread across the seven seas, the four corners of the earth, and every day was regathered in order that he should be judged. And spread out again. So you see that there's an idea that even ashes get judged. So based on that, despite the fact that in fact it's not metame, still you have this idea that it should be buried.
Judged by the Bez Din Shamala.
Bez Din Shamala, correct, absolutely.
The Shama, not necessarily the body of the
ash. Again, there is a connection. We mentioned this beforehand by Shmuel. When he was called down by the Balas Ov, he got very nervous, again, that there's a connection with the whenever you move a body, somehow that causes the soul to get nervous. Right. Again, when we get to Shmuel, we'll have to discuss who this woman was and what exactly happened. So that's that. Next tshuva, again, it's a quote from the Shut Sheheshiv Rav Avram Moshe Fingerhut. If anyone knows who he is, please let me know. I have no idea.
Yes,
excellent. Very good. So again, I quote his tshuva not because I have any idea who he was. This is a tshuva that he writes to Rav Yaakov HaKohen Kaplan, who was the chief rabbi of France at the time. But he quotes Rav Herzog, the Rav Rashi, who says, again, it's in quotation marks, so I'm not sure where he gets this from, but this is a direct quote, he seems to indicate. He says the MS Kosama Aran Harav Herzog, Shekvuras Efer Asoif Enolofias Nidaiti Medina O Mishim Kavara Kadoshin. He said technically you don't have to, but out of respect you should do it. He habe deos kvar nishtafa al sherozoz im yeshri of rikvar efer mesolo, v'ayin, etc. He gives a list, sheherich b'inyan zeh, mishnah l'melech. He goes to a list of people who have discussed this previously. Pita ein chiyu b'kvar rav, obviously says there is no obligation to bury somebody who's been burnt. He called makom agave yavshu kadoshe, ere pshita nuchuyav l'kovar, mimishim b'zayon, imishim kapara. In kei efer sh'ayu ha-kadoshim tzrichim geniza. So just like a ripped Sefer Torah should be buried away out of respect, so too, these holy people who died, HaKadosh Hashem, they all should be buried because of respect. That is the same idea. And it's very interesting, right? We were discussing, we got into this topic over the last 2 days between Mincha and Maariv, discussing whether someone who's cremated is allowed to be buried in the Jewish cemetery afterwards. And we said it was a little tricky. So you see here that from a technical halachical point of view, ashes don't get buried. But if someone deserves respect, right, then we will still bury the ashes. However, if the person went and turned their back and were cremated, then again, halachically they don't deserve it. They don't get it. And they don't deserve the respect, which is why we will not bury someone who was cremated in the Jewish cemetery. Now, once you start with this, of course, you're going to end up with a lot of twists on the Shaila. The Chalkas Yaakov of Yaakov Breish wants to know if somebody gets word that this was unfortunately very common during the war. Word came down that your loved one died in a camp. Would you like their ashes?
How did they know
who's ashes? What? The Nazis made this offer all the time. Whether they knew what they were sending, as much as you can trust the Nazi, that's how reliable it was. And in fact, the rabbis at the time advised people, say, no, we don't want the ashes, because they believed it could be the people weren't even dead yet. Right? And in fact, asking for the ashes might just speed up. Correct. So the question is, this is a case of someone who was getting the ashes. In general, the halacha is as follows, that Shiva begins at the time of Kvura. And if there is a break, Shloshim also begins at the time of Kvura. In this case, when does it begin? Does it begin at the time when you hear of the death? Or does it begin at the time of the Kvura? So the Chalkas Yaakov basically says, there's no kavura here. If the person was cremated, whatever you're going to do is not a halachic burial. And therefore, Shiva begins right away. If you get it, you should bury it. All very nice. But to say that this is a kavura that we're going to wait to start the avelos from, absolutely none. Not only that, but he makes a few interesting points. Let's skip to the last paragraph on the page. Benidon didon mi yemer al betach to offer hanishach misham who may also miss a nifter. How are we believing them that these are the ashes that we're burying? Right. But tzrichan le'nemanus to our coast, we're going to go believe the non-Jewish authorities here. If that's kam me'achronim, etc., that's forget about it. He says, so yeah, the fact that it's not a burial, and who even knows what we're burying here? Right? It could be as far as we know, this is their ashtrays that they sent over. So he says, forget it, nothing to talk about. Next question. This is something that came up. Nishalti me'echan me'chashuvei rabbanim ba'artzal sabris she'be'ir gadola hekimu gala eil l'zecher kadoshim v'shama heviyu me'efer kadoshim v'shama so b'tzintzenes liros ishapra avdi. There was a Holocaust memorial set up in America, I don't know where, but part of the memorial was a container with ashes of the victims. Is that appropriate or not?
You're asking us?
Yeah.
I think because first of all, we don't know who it represents, the millions who were murdered.
Well, what if they decide to just put a dead body there? That
dead body?
A body.
No.
Right, the unknown soldier.
A body needs the ashes.
Correct. Again, so this is obviously, if there is an obligation to bury it, then you can't leave it out. If there's no obligation to bury it.
There's no obligation to bury ashes.
Respect. But out of respect, if this were really... Someone
right.
who is most nefesh.
But I thought that's the whole point you're making.
Right. So he says, I think it's wrong. This is not appropriate. Right? Even though there might not be a technical halachic reason to bury, out of respect, it should be buried. And therefore, it is inappropriate to leave it out.
To display them like that.
Correct. Okay. That is not right. That is the idea. Very interesting. This idea, is it a burial? Is it? What are we doing here? So again, we seem to have agreement that you do bury the ashes. But the question is, is this an obligation or is this just the right thing to do?
It
seems like it's the second. Therefore, a veilus begins before, because it's not really, right? But still, you shouldn't leave it out because it's not the right thing to do. This comes up actually in the Sefer Chesed Yehoshua. Chesed Yehoshua is written by Rabbi Yehoshua
Greenwald,
correct. The Chuster of. Oh, how do you like that? Any relation to Jack? I would guess as well. I was trying to figure that out. Right, so he was Nifter in 1969, I think. So the Chuster of, who I did not realize was that closely related to Edos.
where was he living?
Brooklyn. Okay. Also known as Chust, his close friends. So he dealt with this in his Sefer as well. So he says, interestingly, there is a tradition. So when it, just a little bit of background, we do not allow Jews and non-Jews to be buried in the same cemetery. Why? Might lead to mixed dancing.
Exactly.
So, right?
But I know we make this.
So the idea. So it's all based on. It's really based on a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin says that people that get skila or sreifa are not buried with the people who get hereg uchenek, right? They're right.
Translate this. Yeah.
So there are four types of death penalties. Stoning, burning, beheading, and strangulation.
Got it.
Okay.
I remember. And
what?
I remember that.
Not personally, but okay. So the idea is, depending on the severity of the punishment, you get a different. So therefore, if someone did a more severe punishment, right, they should not be buried with someone who did a less severe punishment, right? Okay. That there are different levels of holiness and they should not be mixed together.
Okay.
Right? So therefore, Jews have 613 commandments, right? Non-Jews have 7 commandments, right? Therefore, we assume that Jews are on a higher level of holiness based on that, and therefore we do not bury them together based on the same idea. There is a concept that takes it further. If someone dies, al kiddush Hashem, if someone is killed for being Jewish, they are on a higher level than a typical Jew, and therefore they get buried separately because they don't want to hang out with the rest of us.
Meaning a separate section of a cemetery.
Correct. Or a separate cemetery. So the question is, do we not bury these ashes in the cemetery because they deserve better? What? Right. I mean,
or
separate.
A very special place for just these ashes.
Right. Whatever it is. So the Chuster Rav discusses that, and he assumes, he goes through the discussion, I only give you part of it, as always, and he says that the bottom line is that no, since again, this isn't really, he says, since, let's skip to the end, Hacha ba'eferd sovor de guf ha'kvura hu rak chumra. This isn't really a burial, right? It's just, you know, a special stringency we take upon ourselves. U'kavod. And therefore, we're doing it out of special honor for them. The Rov Poskim ain't bo mitzvahs kvura kalal, and the majority of the Poskim don't think that you really have to do it. But vadi ain't shum chashim kovrin so offer some kivrei Yisrael. Therefore, since it's not really a burial, you can separate it. Very interesting. The Ein Bakalacha. You know what the Ein Bakalacha? Avi, you know what the Emek Halacha? Your family. What? Rav Yosef Baumol. Who's Rav Yosef Baumol? The grandfather of? I'll give you a hint. The Emek Bracha was published by YU. Grandfather of Norman Lamb. Actually wrote it. So he writes, actually, he obviously was very friendly with the Chusta Rav. Vod Yedidi Agon, I'm a first of Machar, Habaki Bechadre Torah, Harav Yeshua Greenwald Shlita, Av Bezin the Chust, writes him a letter, and he says he got his letter, and he disagrees. He says, Kuchosa Yaker, Afar Kedoshim Shinokach, Mitel Afar Beushpitzen. What's Auschwitzen? Auschwitz. He says, he was talking, right? Auschwitz, when they went in, you had the ovens, and the ovens had piles of ashes, and the assumption was, right, so yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Wait, and the assumption was?
That these were Jewish bodies.
Okay, Jewish ashes.
Right, correct. Now, interesting, we're not going to get too involved in it, but I'll just raise the issue that is raised here, is that it wasn't only Jews that were killed in Auschwitz. Let's
see.
What?
Gypsies.
There were gypsies, you know, there were others.
Another million and a half were murdered that weren't
Jews. Not in Auschwitz necessarily, but no. Not another million in Auschwitz.
There was the British said that quite significantly more people were murdered in Auschwitz than what the United States ever claimed.
I find it very hard to believe that a million non-Jews were killed in Auschwitz. The numbers just don't add up. Right.
But there were
many, as we said. Right. Not an incident.
Excuse me, Abby, they were supposed to be 5.5 million non-Jews anyway. Right. Who were murdered in the camps in besides, so Jews had maybe 6 million just the Jews, but non-Jews was another 5.5 million murdered in the camps.
You're telling me there was as many non-Jews murdered in the camps as Jews?
Yes.
I don't accept that.
Okay.
Challenge flag has been thrown.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So
bring your sources, Marcia.
Right.
Well, I don't have.
They're gonna have to go.
Right. The challenge flag has been thrown. I don't buy that.
But how many non-Jews were murdered?
I don't have a count, but it ain't that many.
This is kind of base to ask, but. Those ovens were running a lot for a long time. They filled with ashes all the time. I'm sure they were disposing of ashes, and I'm sure there were piles of ashes there. Is that what we're talking about?
I assume what we're talking about are the piles that were left there at the time. I assume whatever they at the time of liberation. I assume that the Nazis were in Machbet to bury them. I could say there was a fair amount of certainty. In the war.
In the war was millions by the camps.
In the camps?
Yes, in the
war. Well, not in the camps. No, I can't.
I'm still asking this question about as they had to clean out those ovens to keep burning people. So they had to be disposing of ashes all the time.
Correct.
So my question is, were there like mountains of ashes there?
I don't know what they did with them. I have no idea. So he says the bottom line, the Corinthian Rabbamals, the Lefizer, Benidon, the Danikas, there's a double sveker. Safik Shimon is Arv Etzem Haluz Betocha Offer. He doesn't think that there was any loose bone that got in there. Intisosh is Ari Dumalahoya Kisora, and if there was, then it must have been a very small amount. So he said, but the bottom line is Ein Bev Kadesh of Ero Shum Chash Tuma. Meaning that a Kohen could have done the burial on this. The Kohen could pick up the boxes, they could bury the boxes, because there was no Toma. This really, to a large extent, is not a burial, but rather it is a case of not... What? Right, giving cover, which is highly... On the last page, I bring a series of tshuvas, which are the one step beyond. We start with Rev. The Piskei Uziel, Rev. Ben Tzion Chai Uziel, the first Rishon Letzion, where he discusses this and he slips into something else in the middle. L'maskana d'dina, bottom line. B'hasal kinan b'hain nachtinan de boris. What is boris? Soap. Shinasa me atzmos of basar kadoshim shnisrafu mesu, that was made out of the flesh and bones of the holy ones who died. V'achrei mosam shochu hanatzim hatmeim es yadim ha'arzorios v'aproyis. V'natzal eschalreim lasos mehem boris. It wasn't enough to kill them, but then they had to make them into soap afterwards. So do you have to bury the soap? We'll get there. He said there's no difference between the soap and the ashes. Technically, no. Again, it is far removed. However, the same respect that is given should be given to this soap. Now, would it be appropriate to put this soap in a museum?
It smacks of the same thing as putting the ashes out.
Correct, absolutely. So again, you in the case of the soap, which is, I could almost hear the argument to allow it.
Because people should see.
Because again, it's kind of, if there was truly an obligation of burial, then no. But again, this is not a matter of burial. This is a matter of respect. And if there would be a greater good, perhaps accomplished by putting it to Yad Vashem or the like, I could hear the argument. Well, just leave it at that. I'm not saying that that's a win, but I could begin to hear the argument. Next question. Very upsetting. Adam Echachu Kohen, he once was a Kohen, Kibo min Medinas Ashkenaz, he received from Germany, Sifrei Chol asher noda ki echricha shalahem nase me'or Adam, me'osa ha'nashim shenishvidu menachas shmad rachman letzlan. They used human skin to bind the books from victims of the concentration camp. One, he's a Kohen, could this remain in his house? Two, can he sell the books because he'll be getting benefit from it? Three, does he have to bury it because it's a person? Any thoughts?
Again, I think it's the same with the ashes and the soap.
I don't think it's the same.
Why not?
Yep.
Made a holy thing.
No, it's not holy. Correct. This is much worse than the ashes. This is part of the human body.
And the soap isn't?
No, the soap has already been ground down, etc., just like the ashes.
Okay.
Unlike the ashes, which basically pretty much everyone agreed is not matame, this is matame. A Kohen cannot come and cut.
What kind of books? The German books?
Yes.
Just German, any
non-holy books. Whether you're allowed to, he said, yeah. This, arguably, is not the same. This is much worse. And if you ask me about putting these books in a museum, I'd be much slower to say that this is allowed. Because here, this is an actual, again, it wasn't burnt, it wasn't chemically altered. Similarly, Yeshua's Moshe, a case that we might be more familiar with, very, very, again, I cut out most of these tshuvas, but obviously all of them end with very strong words, you know, wishing nechama to the people that were the victims and quite the opposite for the perpetrators. But this one's particularly bothersome. I left a little bit at the beginning. Baruch Hashem, Dayan, Emes, Erosh, Chodesh, Gimel, Iyar, Toshin, Gimel, Pesach tikva yimei azikron lechanikas mosreifas mishpachti v'negosi Hashem yimeinokim damo. First thing, this is the day that my family was murdered and my city. And in the year of 1942, so he talks about the case of what we know all too well. He's talking about lampshades made out of human skin, right? And these are the types of things which you do see in museums, unfortunately. So you say, "Rakelim elu shenasu me'oros kedoshi Yisrael bevadei chovu lekovrim v'asul in gonzam." You can't leave them out. They have to be buried. He came in the Ba'or Ha'adim Yisbo Mishum Mitzvahs Kavura. Mishamar and Esameis. It's an Avera not to bury it. Again, these cases, he says, undoubtedly, you cannot keep them in a museum, but you have to bury them. The last case was a little different, but it's related, so I put it on as well. At the time that they entered the concentration camps, they found piles of hair that were removed from the dead bodies. And the question was whether or not that hair would have to be buried.
Removed from the dead bodies?
Removed from the dead bodies.
What about the sharing of people's hair before?
So again, that wasn't what this is. Again, hair that was cut off beforehand, right? Again, that's not a problem. Right? Living people get haircuts all the time. You don't have to bury it, right? Mm-hmm. In this case, where they cut the hair off of the dead bodies,
they must have smelled
it. In these cases, the psakas again that the hair also had to be buried, like any other case. So obviously these are very terrible cases, but again we have to be careful. Oftentimes, yes, that we want to preserve what we can preserve, that people won't deny, that people won't forget. But on the other hand, we have to remember the victims. And in cases where there is an obligation, at least in the cases where there's an obligation, if something has to be buried, it can't be preserved. You can take a picture of it, but it has to be buried. Right? In the case of the ashes, as I said, there's what to talk about. I'm not saying that it's okay, because again, it could be that the true respect for them is not to leave it out, but rather to bury it. So in cases like that, you know, there's you can at least have a discussion, but in actual the lampshades, unfortunately, there's really nothing to talk about. That does have to be buried. Yes.
Ashes, when they